bob your head to the
dope track.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, here we are, another session of the Wisco Weekly Podcast. My special guest, co-host, we're bobbing our heads to this music, getting us in the groove here, talking about some car business stuff, some customer experience stuff. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I want to welcome my special guest co-host to the episode, Rudy Salo. Mr. Rudy Salo, thank you for coming on. Hello, how are you, sir?
Thanks for the opportunity, Dennis. It has been something I've been wanting to do with you for a while now.
Well, we've talked about this for a couple months, few months ago, and I've intently been listening to some of the things you've been saying, some of the pieces that have been written about you. So listeners, please stay tuned to a bonus episode following this episode where Rudy and I will get into the nitty-gritty. He's an attorney based out in Los Angeles, and you're just going to have to listen to the next episode because we're going to get really into the nitty-gritty of some of the legal elements and kind of what the future of automotive is going to look like in cities and counties and states. So it's actually going to be a very good one. However, Rudy, for this show, for this episode, I want to continue along the discussion of previous episodes of talking about the evolution of the salesperson to a product expert. So one of the questions I have for you is, can you tell me and the listeners, can you share with us a memorable car buying experience?
Yeah, I can. I only have one memory. Interestingly enough, in high school, you know, I got a hand-me-down car. It was a 1966 Mustang that I didn't treat very well.
I like how you say that so casually. A 1966 Mustang. Where is that Mustang now?
I didn't treat it very well. And I learned, you know, I'm trying to find it because when I was 18, it fell into disrepair. Can you imagine after only 2 years? It was my father's car, and he got it souped up and fixed it. And so that was handed down to me. And after that, I went through a series of hand-me-downs from my parents. Okay. So fast forward 15 years later to the very first car that I actually went and purchased.
Okay.
It was a car for my wife because I had, we had gotten a hand-me-down from her grandparents.
Okay.
And it had had some issues. We went to Lexus of Queens in New York because as you remember the last time we were hanging out with each other, mm-hmm. I was commuting between LA and New York, not by car.
A jet setter.
I was a jet setter at the time. And we went to Lexus of Queens. We had done an incredible amount of research into the exact car that we wanted, which was an RX. We knew it was going to be an RX. Okay. We didn't know the exact year. But we went to Lexus of Queens, and we checked out a number of their used cars. And the experience, my one and only experience, no kidding, it's the only experience I've ever had. It's the car that I drove down here with.
Okay.
We drove it across country. Couldn't have been easier. The guy that we worked with, I knew what I wanted. I went in there with one intent and one intent only. I knew I wanted to get Sirius satellite radio in my car, and I wanted them to pay for it. If I got that, I didn't care what the price was, and I got it.
Okay.
I mean, who knows if I overpaid for it?
Right.
But that day, you know, several hours later, we drove out with our new car.
Tell me about the salesperson you met. Can you remember some, like, can you paint the demographics? Can you give me?
Yeah, actually, I can. I totally remember him. I was actually trying to remember his name. He was about mid-30s, African-American. I think he had been working there for a while because everyone seemed to know him.
Okay.
And it was just super easy.
And so it wasn't anything either where he had to demonstrate a level of knowledge or experience or expertise on the product per se, because again, it sounds like you came in, you knew what you wanted, you saw the car on the website, so you were like, hey, Mr. Salesman, sir, we're looking at this particular car. He showed you the car, everything checked out on your end, and so you were good to go.
Absolutely. Once again, it was a car
from my car salesman's wet dream.
I'm telling you, I couldn't have made it easier.
Yeah.
I had hand-me-down a Lexus that I had purchased from my parents. So I was all about the Lexus. Mm. So after spending months convincing my wife to go towards the Lexus, we knew what we wanted. Mm. I mean, we still both own Lexuses to this day. And we are the car salesman's wet dream because my wife is a meticulous researcher when it comes to cars.
Mm.
You should have her on your show. I'm telling you, she's phenomenal. She would, you two would get along swimmingly.
Okay. Well, Rudy, on this show, we're going to hear from a guy named Jeff Wall.
Yep.
He's a veteran of the automotive business, 30 years deep kind of thing. And he's taken a lot of that experience and now wanting to help dealerships with their staff, with their sales staff, and helping train and develop the staff so they can handle today's modern customer.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
So let's get into the show.
Let's do it.
And usually what people are having trouble with is building relationships. They don't understand it. People don't understand this is actually a job where you can make, you know, $40,000 to $125,000 a year. Jeff Wall from JW&A Group. Today's salespeople, they want to work for one price stores. They don't want to go through all that. They want to be a salesperson.
And when you're saying these salespeople, I presume we're talking about millennials.
Today's, that's exactly right.
All right, Rudy. So that is Jeff Wall from JW&A Group. That's his own company there. Let me just tell you a little bit about Jeff here. So Jeff, he's been in the business quite a while. He started back in 84 as a salesperson in Lake Chevrolet, and he's from the Great Lakes region in North Dakota there. He then served as general manager of the store from 98 to 2015. Around this time, his store was part, Lake Chevrolet was part of Bergstrom Auto, which is a 30-store group. It's one of the bigger automotive groups in the nation. And then in addition to having this training company he does now, he and his sons run an independent dealer store with about 40 cars in their inventory in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. So interesting story. When I was hanging out at this automotive conference, NADA, I was hanging out at this little lounge area and I noticed Jeff was sitting down kind of just a few feet away from me, sitting down in one of the couches. And probably after maybe 30 minutes of him sitting down and me sitting where, you know, I am kind of preparing for my next podcast interview, Jeff takes the initiative and comes up to me. He goes, "Hey, so what do you do?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm just hosting a podcast." I said, "What do you do?" And he goes, "Oh, well, I train dealership staff and I have my own store and I've been in the business for 30 years. I'm like, "Cool. You want to have a seat?" He goes, "Yeah." So we proceeded to wrap out then for about 40 minutes and just talking about the business. And one thing about Jeff that you'll continue to hear more about is he brings a bit of old school flavor with new school feel. So if, you know, based on some of the comments he was just making right now, the whole idea of relationships and relationship building, this is an area that you could kind of draw out a bigger circle in just society in general, how the internet, how social media has made a lot of, let's say in this case, millennials, not as vocal. They're not as, you know, their communication skills aren't up to par as where they should be compared to his generation, especially in the dealership world. You kind of need those communication skills.
I'm still obsessed with the fact that you said that guy's from North Dakota. He does not sound like a character from Fargo. So like, how, at what point did you trust that guy was actually from North Dakota? That's the first thought that comes to my mind.
You'll hear a little bit of that accent coming out.
I got to hear it, because then I'll start trusting this guy. That being said, if you're talking, the one thing that struck me in the very first segment that he was talking about was about building relationships. That cuts across beyond just the true salesman customer relationship. Yes, when you think about that visually, you think about somebody walking into an auto dealership. But that relationship cuts across every single industry. Mm. I have clients at my law firm, right? Mm. I've got a lot of banks, I've got a lot of governments, but the way I think about them, I think about them as customers. Mm. I do, because they chose me as their attorney. Some old school attorneys have a problem with thinking of clients that way, but that's a terrible old mentality.
Yes.
And it's an arrogance in my opinion.
What are you doing to build the rapport with your clients?
I spend a lot of time with them.
Mm.
I do.
In like way, like physically, like on the phone?
Physically, I try to go see my clients, and I have many. I try to go see them once a quarter, or at least once every 6 months, and they're throughout the entire nation. Mm. I see them face to face. It is that interpersonal relationship. Mm-hmm. Having grown up prior to the internet, mm-hmm. and having had a very large family and had the value of family and the value of friendship, FaceTime to me is huge. And I know that as a customer myself of many other services, when somebody gives me the attention, when somebody actually calls me or comes to my face, I feel a kinship towards them, and I feel loyalty.
How was that? So then even in the time when you bought that Lexus, because you knew what you wanted, I mean, would you say that there was a relationship there that, again, even for that short amount of time?
There was that day, because I had one goal and one goal in mind. I literally went in there within the first 5 minutes. I said, look, I know what I want. This is the car, but I want to get that Sirius satellite radio. I want it to work, and I want it to work great. If you can get that for me, take care of it. Took several hours, this and that. At the end of the day, the guy gave me what I wanted. Mm. And the relationship was great for that day, because he told me many times that he was going to take care of me. At the end of the day, I left happy. Mm-hmm. And I only have very good memories of Lexus of Queens. And I still, my wife and I still have the license plate in our garage. We hung it up, and we live in California now. But we have a very fond memory, because we went in there and somebody took care of me.
Car dealerships are kind of still all the same thing. They're doing that thing that's all the way back to the 50s and 60s. Well, you got to meet and greet them. You got to give them a good presentation. You got to give them a walk around. You got to give them a dealership tour, which kind of came 10, 12 years ago or 15 years ago. Dealership tour. You got to show them what we offer. And then we do the write-up, and then we do the delivery, and that's how you sell cars.
Now, this is definitely practices that are still being promoted today. And for better or for worse, you kind of do want to do as much of that as you can. Now, granted, this is where sales is more of an art and a craft than it is a science, because certainly, again, if you have your situation where you've done your homework, well, there's no point in you coming in and me like, okay, well, Rudy, let me show you where the service department is, and here, let me have you meet my general manager, and hey, let me have you, you know, like, it's just unnecessary.
They would have lost me. I'm telling you right now, this guy knew. I mean, number one, it's New York, right? So when you're in New York, and I adopted this New York mentality, although my wife keeps telling me that at heart you're truly a New Yorker, which is ridiculous. I'm an Angeleno. But I have this intensity to me. So it could be that in New York, you don't waste people's time, because that's a New York thing. But you're right. It's an art. You're going to know somebody who's, oh, we're just browsing, versus, no, this guy knows what he wants. I'm not going to waste his time, because if I waste his time, I'm going to lose this customer.
Right, right. I mean, I take it on your end, if it's not a dealership, but is there a retail operation that you've casually visited where you would think that would be appropriate?
You mean like showing around and everything?
Yeah, like kind of doing the full, you know, as if like someone's coming to your house and you're giving them a house tour. Like, you ever go in?
Yeah, there is.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one. There's this, this is going to sound ridiculous, but there's this billiards shop in Lawndale, or is it Hawthorne? It's on the border of Lawndale and Hawthorne, that I frequently just kind of go in and browse. And I have these fantasies of look at that pool table, or, oh man, look at that sit-down 80s video arcade game. And I'm establishing this relationship with the owner, and I think he's getting to know me a little. He knows he's going to get a sale. It's just a matter of when my wife's going to let me buy something. But he could see it, you know? Uh-huh. So he does show me around. He'll open up his catalog, and he'll show me a couple things. It's a lot of investment. It is that in that situation.
That's actually a great point. It's an investment, because a lot of times when a customer goes into any kind of retail operation, and you do have and the employee, the staff of the store, does go through more of a tour.
Yeah.
It's an investment, because there's a good chance that that person's probably not buying, and so it is that investment of like spending the time to educate them, to make them aware of how you do business, the way you do business, coming, you know, getting the good deal and all the follow-up and blah, blah, blah.
Here's something that that ties across all businesses, and this ties especially to the law as well. You and I met in Catholic school, okay? And there's this thing, it's called Catholic guilt. And guilt is, I'm sorry, not enough people talk about this. Guilt is an excellent selling point. When you put a lot of time towards somebody, the natural human reaction is to feel like, oh God, I feel guilty. I gotta give something to this guy. And maybe I'm a sucker because I give a lot of business away from guilt. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not so sure about the product, but this guy's put a lot of time into me. I'm going to give him something.
Some of the future is if you go around the NADA convention here, they're talking about these kiosks and whatnot, how customers don't want to talk to salespeople and things like that. That's totally, I believe, is totally wrong. They want a relationship. They want someone that they can call for their warranty book or this or that. They want a relationship.
So, Brady, you informed me earlier that you and your wife were actually in the process of getting a car now.
Yeah.
First question, what are your thoughts? How do you feel about if you were to buy a car without really interacting with anybody or you know, at a very minimal level that you're basically just click on an iPad, click on a kiosk, and everything is good to go, then there you go, there's your car.
There's something inherent about a car. Maybe perhaps it's its expense. Perhaps it's the... You want that reassurance. There's something psychological about it. I mean, a car is not just a product. There's a lot that goes into a car. And we can get into that a little bit more when we talk about all the things that I'm into. It's not just your average product. I mean, it's going to drive your family around. It's safety. It's freedom. Your job could depend upon it. A lot of your life can depend upon a car. So I agree with him when he talks about it, kiosks. No, you want that relationship. Okay. You want to know. You want that safety. My wife and I are going through the car buying process right now. She's mostly handling it because I told you she's so meticulous about it. It's so funny. She was basically telling me the other day. She was actually comparing the salespeople. She was like, it's amazing to me about how much of an impact the actual salesperson can have. I walked into this one car dealership where I thought this was going to be the car, and the dealer, the salesman, excuse me, was basically treated me like I was wasting his time. And it gave me a really bad taste in my mouth. I went to another place where I was really iffy on the car, and the guy couldn't have been nicer, and he really convinced me that he wanted to help me make the right decision, and now I'm leaning towards that car. And my wife is the opposite of me. I'm an extrovert. She's a complete introvert. So like interpersonal reactions or don't just like come easy for her. So the fact that this person was able to break through to her and she's icy means that, you know, salesmanship it goes above and beyond.
You can't underestimate salesmanship, no matter, even if the car business starts to move towards more automation, towards more of this idea of kiosk, the idea of just, you know, the Amazon buying experience. Yeah, you can't underestimate the power of a salesperson. And furthermore, too, again, the art of the sale, because it seems as if that with your wife, knowing her personality, it's like, whether or not the salesperson at the second store was able to pick up on some nonverbal cues, if you are able to pick up on these nonverbal cues of customers, then certainly you can provide them with that, you know, a more comfortable, relaxed car shopping environment just based on their personality. Because again, if your wife were extroverted, well, then you kind of have to, you want to almost kind of mirror that personality too, somebody that's also high energetic. Someone who's more introverted, then if you come across as too enthusiastic, which can be construed as aggressive, well, yeah, I can see how that experience can be soured, and therefore you may completely just go away from wanting the actual brand that you were initially thinking of getting.
Yeah, a truly excellent salesman knows you, whether ENFP, INTJ, those personality breakdowns, they know it the second you walk into a dealer. They can assess you and adjust. They can tweak to your personality. And those are the best salesmen that are out there, in my opinion.
But when we do these classes, we show people that, you know, It's all about results. What you're doing every single day. You know, when you walk into work, are you doing the things that you need to do? Are you calling the people? Are you answering your emails? Are you touching 16 people a day every single day, which equals up to be about 395 people a month? Those are what 25 cars a month salespeople do.
So this is kind of one of the things that I love about Jeff here, because this is very much a down-to-earth, very practical training that he has. A lot of dealership staff, and I'm sure a lot of other managers, will always preach, have you made your calls? Have you sourced out some new prospects and so forth and so on, right? Always new business development. You know, what are you doing? Who's in your pipeline? Take them out, put some new ones in, so forth and so on. But sometimes it's nice to hear from that other voice. And Jeff here, he because he has that years of experience, it's a very simple, for millennials, approach to how to be successful in the car business if you can maintain a level of activity.
I'm going to solely correct you there and take out the two words car business.
Okay.
Any business.
Yes.
What Jeff said is the formula for honestly any business at all. The touching of people, the working of your contacts, the letting people know that you're thinking about them makes all the difference in the world. And you can't fake that. Like, a customer will know whether you're faking it or not. You have to really, number one, in order to touch a customer or to contact a customer or contact a client or reach out to a potential client, you have to really want it. There's a certain amount of inherent passion there that somebody can see right through it. So the fact that he talked about the 16 emails a day and you compound it over the year, it's numbers. It's the perfect marriage of science with feelings, because you're not going to get them all. But it is a numbers game, yeah, just like everything else in life.
Well, I think the other thing too, that where you and I can agree, you know, when you've been in this game of sales in whatever capacity, right? Like, even though you practice law, there's obviously elements of selling that you have to do. There's client relations that you have to do. So when you get to years in the business, years in our own expertise and practices, well, you had mentioned it, like, if you're able to commit to it, then it does start to pay dividends in the long run. This is where I do, though, start to wonder about millennials and sometimes the dealership model, when you do start to employ a millennial, and, you know, especially when you have pay structures that are moving around and you're not able to make as much. So therefore, can you trust that this millennial that you're going to train for a year,
yeah,
is going to stay with you long enough that they can build the relationships so that, you know, as the dealer, you can make the necessary money you can off of his or her efforts in, you know, working, having them work for you?
It is an issue. It is. I mean, I as a partner in a law firm, I work with a lot of younger attorneys and associates. And yes, they happen to be millennials because that's the age group that they're in. Some get it and some do not. Some want it and some do not. Perhaps it might be a smaller portion of the ones that get it and want it because of things like the internet, because of things like social media, because of things that are inherent, that have already kind of, you know, there's this technological relationship versus personal relationships. We grew up differently than they did. That might explain it. So you don't give up on them. I think it just takes a little bit more nurturing, a little bit more showing, a little bit more bringing them under your wing and showing them how to business develop. And business develop in the end is all about relationships, and you have to care. If you don't care, the millennials are going to see it and the customer/client is going to see it too. So if you don't actually care, then the whole thing falls apart like a house of cards.
Kind of get what you pay for, but if you have levels of success for each salesperson as they get to be, you know, 8, 10, 15, 20, and you have levels of success, so those people that are performing are actually getting income, mm-hmm. I found to be the magic number is between $200 and $300 per car, and then up the levels at about 11, 12, and then with a big payout at over 20.
So, Rudy, this is the business model that is starting to become a bit more popular these days, in that going away from strictly commission-based, where when you are commission-based, the opportunity to make in the $100,000 range and up is there's a greater likelihood of that. Now kind of moving more towards this base salary plus a flat system, where every car you sell has a flat to that car as opposed to a commission. And then you can kind of tier it, as he's talking about, where, you know, if you get up to 10 cars, it's $200 per car. If you get to 15 cars, then it's $300, and that could be retroactive. So then all 15 cars are now $300, as opposed to the first 10 being $200, and so forth and so on. So with this kind of pay plan that's out there, and again, you as a customer would never know that, but with a pay plan like this that's out there, how does this, does this make you feel a little bit better knowing the fact that now a salesperson is not on commission base, and so therefore the idea of helping you is, i.e. not fake, i.e. more genuine, i.e. he's looking out for my interest. You know, how does this make you feel knowing the fact that the way a salesperson helps you, their pay plan is a bit more tied to, what's the proper way to describe how that pay plan would be tied to a salesperson? But, you know, it's just they're not trying to gouge you because they're on commission.
I'm conflicted. I am. Okay. Having worked in sales jobs in the past that were tied to commission versus sales jobs in the past that were not on straight commission, it's difficult.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, it brings up an interesting story. I remember when I was, my first job when I went to UCLA, I actually worked in the computer store. Zero commission at all. It was a flat fee. Most of the time when I was there, it was, you know, getting to know the computers, getting to know the students, getting to know things, because I was still learning computers, but I got a good sales job because I had some sales skills. But it was a lot of clock watching. It was like, oh man, I got to get out of here. I want to go study. I want to go to the, you know, go party. I want to do that. Like, okay, I logged my 3 hours. I want to get out. Within the computer store was a cell phone store that was a private business that had leased space from the computer store. After about a year in the computer aspect of it, I switched over to the phone sales, because the phone sales had a base, but it also had some commission on top of it. And I wanted to work more, because the phones that I sold, obviously the better phones that I sold, the higher commission I would get. But I learned more about the phones. Mm. I learned the different aspects of the phones. And I guess just me as a person, I never put my personal interests over the underlying customer, but I did learn them a little bit more.
Because of that commission, because of the fact that you knew you were incentivized.
I had skin in the game. Mm. It's all about skin in the game. And that's just an important, you know, that thought of business, having some skin in the game, is really, really important. It's a motivator, right? It's almost like the difference between communism and capitalism. Hmm. I mean, I don't mean to get all philosophical about that, but it really is.
Yeah, actually, I want to dive in a little bit deeper on that. We might have to do that on the continuation.
Hey, any time, man. I could talk international theory and politics any way, shape, or form.
Me too. I love that.
But you got to have skin in the game. You have to.
Yeah. Well, and so I think this is going to be the, you know, billion-dollar question moving forward, specifically in the car business, is the cultural shift that's going on. Is the skin in the game now defined as, you know, flats, as they call it, flats, right? As opposed to being solely commission-based. But now it's like, hey, 10 cars is $200 per car. 15 cars is $300 per car. So, like, I mean, going back to the bookstore, knowing the fact that if the margins, let's say, I don't, you know, the margins you were making were, I don't know, let's call it 20% on a cell phone sale, yeah, or that base, yeah. So 20%, and let's say that yields you $100. But if you knew that with every cell phone that you sold, it was $50, But then knowing the fact that if you sold 11 cell phones, now you're getting $150. So you knew that now that actually is more than the commission you could make. Does that still provide the same mentality for you that your skin is in the game?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that different aspect of it where it's much more on a volume basis versus, you know, per actual phone is a good barometer, good check for look, we're human beings. Okay. There are some people that are inherently good. There are some people that are inherently greedy. And then there's everybody that has a little bit of greed and a little bit of bad and everything else. So sometimes you just need that check that's inside of there. So I do think that having that, those tiered levels can provide that kind of check, and you could feel more comfortable as a manager or a business owner that, you know, yeah, okay, this guy inherently is a good person. This guy inherently, you know, he's only looking after himself, but this tiered system will balance everything out.
And knowing now the fact that you have guys like Jeff out there that's helping dealerships train employees or staff, does this, you know, now the fact that you're going to be in the market now, is this something that, do you feel good about this, of where the dealership staff is and how you would feel as a customer interacting with that dealership?
Yes, I do. I think that Jeff is, you know, he seems to be in the business for a very, very long time. He knows this business. I think at the end of the day, his heart is entrenched in the right place, which is number one, success. Number two, training of his staff. Number three, making sure the customers get what they want. And a lot of the guests that you do have on your show, they really, or the segments and the clips and everything, they really come from the right place. I mean, if anything, you're pulling the curtain. Customers in general, and maybe it's because of movies, maybe it's because of TV shows, maybe it's because there's this, you know, negative, you know, like, oh, we you have to haggle with car dealers, or oh, you got to watch your back. If anything that you're doing, you're pulling the curtain behind it and saying, no, this is an honest business. We're good people. We're watching out for our workers. We're watching out for you. And no, we're not just looking out for ourselves. Yeah, we're trying to make money. Everyone needs to make money. Yeah. But I think what you're doing is great by showing people like that Jeff are out there.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Let's end on that note.
Sure. We'll do it.
Don't rely on your sales manager or general manager to train you to be a salesperson. You have to be a constant learner every day.
Hey, listeners. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Wisco Weekly. This is episode number 8. And a special shout out and thank you to Jeff Wall for being my featured guest for this episode. Another thank you to my special co-host, Rudy Solo. It's always great to bring on people who aren't from the car business and get them to hear about what's going on in the business so that they can speak the praises within their own circles of how the car business is trying to do their ultimate best to provide a great customer experience. So it's kind of interesting that this podcast, it seems like I'm doing more good for customers than I am for dealers, which is great. And I do want to thank actually a few other people for showing Wisco Weekly some love. Rochelle Carter writes to me that we're grateful for the feature and excited to collaborate. Thanks so much for your generosity. Sandy Belvedere, couldn't agree more. Love your podcast. Lisa Ray, very informative. I like your style. Ryan Turner, I just wanted to let you know that I've been really enjoying your podcast. Love the content. Dennis, keep up the great work. Napa Rum Team, great podcast and appreciate your smooth hosting style. Cheers. Amit Chandarana, enjoyed the conversation, as did I. And Rebecca Kurtzman, you're bringing a much needed education initiative to the auto industry. So thank you guys for all the love. Please continue to tune in. This is what you can expect for next week.
The fourth is actually where we can, we're definitely going to what we call expand your horizons. We can actually start utilizing the Auto Club Speedway, that 2-mile D-shaped oval, or we can actually even bring the cars to you.
This is Dennis Wisco, your host of Wisco Weekly. Closing us out for this episode is Vikings in Tibet, Alchemy Avenue, and their song, Trip the Light. Cheers, pros, lahaim, kipish, nastravi, salut, kampai, mumbrok, to the customer experience.
Have heart, keep up beat.